now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah!
See, a United States astral robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And babes.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain. Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast. From classic to cult and all the cheese in between, the movies are beep, the entertainment is grade A. And I'm your host, Mr. Jason Giaconetti, and I'm joined once again by my dad, Mr. Al Giaconetti.
Good morning, Jay. Today we're going to talk about a really surprise hit from the year 2000, Pitch Black, with Vin Diesel.
And we'll get to it right after this.
They say most of your brain shuts down in cryosleep, all but the animal side. Guess that's why I'm still awake.
If the man is gone, he's gone. Why should he bother us?
Maybe to take what you got. Maybe to work your nerves.
Is he really that dangerous?
Only around humans.
Zeke!
All you people are so scared of me. But it ain't me you gotta worry about now.
Whatever it is, it got Zeke and it nearly got me!
They seem to stick to darkness, so if we stick to daylight, we should be all right.
A total eclipse.
We're gonna lose everybody out here.
Black opened February 18th in the year 2000. So the theatrical running time is 109 minutes. I don't think I've ever seen that. I know I have it, but I don't think I've ever seen the theatrical version. I've only ever seen the unrated version, which runs 112 minutes, which is the DVDs are almost all unrated. Right. This movie, I did not see this in the movie theater. This movie became a hit, a cult movie, once it came to DVD, VHS at the time, and then DVD. And as my dad mentioned, technically, this movie didn't star Vin Diesel. This movie had Radha Mitchell and Cole Hauser as the main two stars, and the third name on that list was Vin Diesel, because Vin Diesel was not a name yet. This is before Triple X. This is before Fast and the Furious, mm-hmm. which he's not even the star of Fast and the Furious. The star listed in that is Paul Walker, the guy right. who died. He's listed as the star. Vin Diesel had made Boiler Room, which is a really weird kind of movie to think about, like Vin Diesel in, because it's all about stockbrokers and whatever, but there's all, you know, intrigue and different things happening there too. But this is one of the movies that helped Vin Diesel break out. This helped him get Triple X. This helped him get Fast and Furious. And then he got a Disney contract, and he became the megastar that Vin Diesel is. And now he can just say, I am Groot, and get paid right. tons of freaking money. My daughter loves. He goes, oh, that's Vin Diesel saying, I am Groot. I go, he's also an Iron Giant, which he is. He's the voice in the Iron Giant, because his voice very, just, you know. Anyway, so the other people in this movie, besides Cole Hauser, Rhonda Mitchell, and Vin Diesel, are Keith David, who I love. Keith David, you might know from John Carpenter Thing or the 40-minute fight sequence in They Live, you know. And then Rhianna Griffin plays Jack or Jackie, which we'll get to. Griffin actually winds up playing Jack in Dark Fury, which is the animated movie that comes between this and the sequel, which is Chronicles of Riddick, but does not play Jack / Jackie in Chronicles of Riddick. It's a different actress right. playing it. For those who don't, Rhonda Mitchell, just real quick, sorry. Vin Diesel, if you don't know who Vin Diesel is, look it up. He's easy. Rhonda Mitchell, she's Rose from the Silent Hill movies. Some people definitely know her from there. She was on Man on Fire, which is a great movie that a lot of people have forgotten about. That's a Tony Scott picture. But the one I always remember her from is the boat captain from Rogue, about the giant rogue crocodile.
Right.
And that is a great movie that no one has seen, because it's Sam Worthington's in that. He played Perseus.
Right.
And he gets dead about halfway through, and he's a jerk most of the time. So, but still. And then obviously David Keith, you know, we just said he's in They Live, and that's what a lot of people know him from. But when people know him here, obviously he's in The Thing, at Carpenter's The Thing, at right. the very end. Him and MacReady are sitting there at the very end, before they, you know, kind of freeze. So
yeah, Keith plays the Iman.
Yes, yeah.
Who was one of the passengers on this passenger ship.
Mm-hmm. All right, so director is David Tui. Now, David Tui, again, if you like The Chronicles of Riddick, because that's what he directed, he also did Riddick. He did a movie, he did The Fugitive,
right,
which is a big thing. He's also the writer of Waterworld, G.I. Jane, The Fugitive, Warlock.
I mean, he's a major player in Hollywood.
A movie he did that a lot of people probably have never seen, a movie called Below. It came out after U-571 being an actual like war movie. Below is about, and there's our first call of the day. We'll be right back after this. And we're back. So as we were talking about, one of the movies that David Tui had done is a movie called Below. It's about, there's ghosts on the submarine. It's a really good movie that most people overlooked. I don't think it ever played in the theaters. We caught it on DVD. It was Rue Morgue and Fangoria had been kind of touting it. It was like movies, I think of what, in the vein of like The Bunker. Remember the ones with what's the other one called? There was The Bunker and then the one that got all the sequels. It was like, not Black Rain or Black, it was Black Sun was one of the sequels, and it doesn't matter. But there's all these movies that no one's ever heard of, no one's ever seen. They star actors that we know because they're actors who act in those kind of movies. And it's about the same thing like when we learned about like Dog Soldiers or Ginger Snaps or whatever. People are like, I've never heard of these movies. And it comes to being like, wow, this is really good. It's like, yeah, it's good, but we've known about it for 3 years. Way to be late to the party. Anyway, so your writers here are Jim and Ken Wheat. They also went on to write the other Riddick stuff as well. Okay, so the production company was Polygram Filmed Entertainment. And this is along with Interscope and Gramercy Pictures. Now, the problem with Polygram Filmed, some of you recognize that name when you see that come up. That became Universal because Universal bought them out during the process of making. This is one of the last films they produced. A budget of $23 million, which is a decent sized budget for this movie. But when you see what's on the screen, it's because it's shot in a desert, but it's also all the effects. This is 2000. So we're not talking about a time when, like, this is not like Planet of the Apes or like War of the Planet of the Apes kind of stuff, or like even like Two Towers and things like that effects, you know, kind of thing. These were early on, and they're really well done, which is why it costs so much money. Opening weekend had it opened at number 4 and made $11.5 million on a world, and it had a worldwide take of $53.2 million. Now, the February release might say, like, Jay, isn't that where they dump movies? It is. In 2000, February releases were movies they were dumping. Those were movies they felt had no chance. They were just the extra pictures used to dump movies there. And what happened was they used to do things like that. I'm thinking of the movie like Pathfinder was dumped in February. I'm thinking of like movies like this. There's other movies, and they're usually R-rated movies, are dumped in February because they have nowhere else to put them. They know they want to put them out. They want to get them a run in the theater. And they figure, we'll make our money, some money in the theater, and our money's going to come on DVD. R-rated movies make way more money on DVD. Used to be that case than they did in the theater because R-rated movies were hard to get into. But now R-rated movies in February is a thing. And you can thank 300 for that because 300, which we saw opening weekend in the theater, and the woman walks out halfway through and I'm like, what'd you think of it, about bowling? Like, good Lord, you know, kind of thing. Like, she got pissed and that husband's behind her eating the popcorn. I mean, you leave right before the giant battle, the first giant battle. But 300 did that. That was back in 2006. And that now has made February the when R-rated movies come out. The other time, of course, being Halloween, when all your monster movies come out, you're a monster. Horror movies, like all the Saw movies came out then. That's when Paranormal Activities came out, things like that. Anyway, but this is one of those movies that helps kind of define that February is a time you could make money on movies that may not be your mainstream thing. I mean, as it is now, you get to April and you start seeing big releases coming out. It used to be May. It was the last week of May. Then it was the second week of May. Then it was like beginning of May. Now it's like into April. You get big movies coming out. Guardians of the Galaxy came out early. Yeah. All the kid movies come out.
Well, you know, even when you talk about a big movie, Disney released Beauty and the Beast in March.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it was the cash in on not having. Yeah. Well, Disney also has to weigh out what other movies are going to be out that time, who your target audience is. March is still kind of that limbo time when you can get some of those kid movies out, like Boss Baby came out, things like that. Because you were not going to try to release it against Cars 3, Spickle Me 3.
Oh, no, but
right. But Disney's not going to release it against itself. It wanted its DVD to be out before Cars 3 even came out. And Cars 3, as of this recording, is, you know, killing the movies. And so is Spickle Me 3. Those movies make money hand over fist because they have a built. I mean, again, they're the third movie in a series of movies, but they have a built-in audience because kids love those things. I mean, Haley loves those movies. So anyway. Distributed by USA Films, which is kind of a smaller company in the entire idea of who's distributing it, but that's part of why it was released then too. Again, Universal took it over, and eventually Universal was the one who put out Chronicles and put out Riddick. Okay, so
the creatures that were created here were done by Patrick Tatopoulos, who had done Godzilla in '98. Right. So they did spend their money, the $23 million, on, if not main name actors, at least on the crew that put the picture together.
And Tatopoulos, most of you know, now know him from the couple seasons of Face Off he was on.
Right.
And Neville Page took his place and stuff. And they bring Tatopoulos back every now and then. But he's known, I mean, nowadays, it's pretty hard to think of Underworld and not think of Tatopoulos. I mean, whether you like the films or not, and that's a different story. His vampire and werewolf and all those things work on there. Guys like Steve Wang, when we met him, he talked about the fact that, like, he had a, you know, take from this, and it's just all the different things that go into there. There's a lot of hands in there. It's not just all him, but it's hard to think of his stuff now and not think of vampires and werewolves and the stuff along those lines. All right, so our story opens in the future. The ship, the Hunter Grasner, which is both the, I know there were two of the producers, that's their right. last names.
Their last names.
Yeah, is transporting passengers in cryostasis. A Muslim preacher called him, he's called Iman, and he has an actual, it's Abu Iman al-Waldid. That's Keith David.
Right.
You know, if you couldn't figure it out from the rest of this cast, that's Keith David. He's accompanied by three young pilgrims who are traveling to the new Mecca. There's also a boy named Jack, a pair of prospectors named Shaza and Zeke, and a merchant named Paris, and what appears to be a law officer named Johns, escorting a criminal named Riddick. Riddick has surgically modified eyes that allow him to see in the dark. And the glinted eyes, they appear to glint in there, those contacts, were atrocious, and that was the problem. That's one of the things. And that doesn't that show the difference nowadays? Like they were just doing CG.
CG, right? Yeah.
In 2000, Vin Diesel, who is one of the biggest stars in Hollywood, well, not The Rock big because right. you know because that's his project, but he's one of the biggest stars in Hollywood, would never be putting these hard contacts in his eyes to reflect back. But at the time, this is what they did.
Yeah. By the way, Riddick's full name is Richard P. Riddick.
Yes.
For those of you who were. You know, if you watch any of the movies, he's never called anything but Riddick in any of the movies. He actually says his name to one of the characters. Oh, my name is Richard P. Riddick.
Yeah. Well, it's part of what it is. I mean, and in any of the other, if you read any of the, because I've read the novelizations of Chronicles of Riddick and Riddick, they never mention anything. They always just call him Riddick. It's right. just his name. Okay. So debris from a comet. Tail ruptures the ship's hull, killing the captain and knocking the ship off course. The surviving crew members attempt to land the ship on the nearby planet. As the ship's falling apart, the docking pilot, Carolyn Fry, now that's Rhonda Mitchell, she attempts to dump all the passengers, the entire section, to reduce their weight. So she's willing to kill everyone on board except her and the co-pilot to save her life. So that's important that we understand that she is willing to kill everyone to save herself, because this story, as much as you might like, oh, it's a science fiction movie, this story is about redemption. This entire movie is about redeeming oneself. And if you're not willing to redeem oneself, then you must pay the price in the end. So, but the co-pilot stops her. So during the crash landing, several passengers' compartments are destroyed, and Owens, who is the co-pilot, sustains fatal injuries. And we watch him agonizingly die in front of us.
Right.
Right? The group... Yeah.
So there are 8 survivors.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm getting to. Yeah. So, and those are the people we mentioned before. We don't know the other passengers on there because they're all dead.
Right. Now, one of the things I wanted to mention is the crash scene lasts quite a while in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But we're supposedly in the future. And when you see the co-pilot as she tries to jettison, I mean, all she's doing is pulling levers. I mean, there's no computer on board to press buttons okay. to let these things go.
So remember in Aliens, they pull a lever on that too to open things. That's just the way ship worked then.
Yeah, but I mean, but there must have been a dozen different levers.
You're buying the whole cryostasis.
Well, I know.
But to think about it, you don't want a button. You want it to be a lever if you're going to jettison part of your ship. You don't want it to be a button like, oh, crap, I hit up my elbow. Oh, no, everyone dies.
Well,
right?
Well,
look, a lever makes sense. It's like opening an airlock.
Yeah, but at this point, the ship is careening out of control. She's raising up and reaching for all these different levers. It's easier to grab one of those by mistake.
No, but you're not going to grab it and pull it and open it. It makes sense that on the, what do you call it?
Well,
like, if you had a button, you know, to press, like, oh, no, hit the button. But anyway, so.
Okay. The ship is careening towards the planet, the windshield caves in. Now she's sitting in the front of this ship. The windshield caves in. They're going at 1,000 miles an hour. The scene right before the windshield caves in, the entire ship is on fire from the atmosphere coming in. She's sitting there holding on to the, I'll call it the steering wheel, but she's facing out of the window. And when they crash, she gets out. She doesn't even have any windburn, let alone being baked to death.
Oh my! All right.
But again, I'm watching this movie to be very critical.
I know you are. Again, we're buying everything up to this point. We have to buy that she survives, because if she's not there, she can't be redeemed. Can't be redeemed, then Riddick cannot be redeemed. And then it's all the things that have to happen in the story. Trust me, this originally, I got a whole bunch of stuff with the story originally was supposed to be. It's not supposed to be this movie.
Okay.
So anyway. So they start exploring their surroundings, and they learn that the planet has 3 suns, which means it's perpetually daylight. Not Daylight, the movie with Sylvester Stallone with the trap in the tunnel, which no one has seen since it opened and closed. Anyway, I saw it. Anyway, so where are we? They find that an abandoned geology research settlement and a dropship with drained batteries. Zeke is killed, but his body goes missing, so everyone suspects that Riddick killed him, right? While searching for the body, Fry barely escapes the underground creature. She goes down the tunnel, the
cave entrance.
It's not a, it's I guess it's a cave. It's like a mound. Yeah. Like she goes into the mound. Like they have these funnel mounds that come out of the ground that all of them come out of.
Yeah, almost like
anthills or termite hills. So what happens is she barely escapes the underground creatures, and they learn that they're photosensitive, which is important. Johns cuts Riddick a deal and says if they help him escape, he'll set him free. By this point in the movie, you pretty much know that Johns is lying about everything. Anything his mouth is moving, it's only to get himself over for whatever he needs. He has no means of ever going to let Riddick go. But at this point, we don't quite know that he's a merc. We kind of figure he's probably a dirty cop, but he's a mercenary.
Right.
And when you know that and that's very important in Chronicles of Riddick and Riddick, when you start understanding the universe that this is all about, is there are criminals, there are mercs, and then eventually learn about all the different races of people and the people who destroy planets. And no one is a good person. The only good person in this movie is Iman. He's the only one who's a good person. And the children, but they all just fodder to get eaten.
Yeah. Well, I'll get to Iman in it.
He's not a bad person.
No, he's not a bad person.
And even in the future, if you go into the rest of the series, he's still the only one who, again, anytime he ever deceives someone is to save somebody. It's not deceiving them for personal gain.
Right.
Anyway.
I mean, the cave sequence the nice part about that was that it was a very effective with that shadowy reveal of the creature in the background as she's crawling through. You don't see its face. You just get this outline, almost like a shadow. But it was very effective for what's to come.
Yeah, it's very old school. Keep it in the shadows. They didn't throw it in your face in the first 5 minutes. Now, there's anything wrong with that. Because I think some movies, like when we talked about Seven Voyages of Sinbad, that was a movie where you see the Cyclops, but you're not going to that movie. You're going because Ray Harryhausen's name's on it.
Yeah, well, this is to build up the suspense.
Because you don't know what these things are yet. At this point, you could still believe this is a movie about Riddick murdering people. This movie could be about that. And we don't know yet that it's about creatures. I mean, if you saw the trailer, you might have figured out it's about creatures. But, anyway. So, as they're working on getting the dropship up and running again, they realize that the geologists must have all been killed by these creatures because they're now all gone. There's not one remnant of these people. And they said, well, maybe they left. And he said, Would you leave with your clothes in a drawer? They left in a hurry. There's food still sitting there. It reminds me of Aliens when they're going through, and no one says it in Aliens, but clearly something bad's happened in there. When they're walking through, and what's on the desk? The coffee, the donut, like all the things that clearly they were in the middle of doing everyday life, and then bad stuff happened. So one of the young pilgrims gets ambushed and eaten alive inside a building.
Yeah, it's called the coring room.
Right, yeah. Well, because they had the core, that's what I'm saying. They're coring into the geology samples, which is giving these, which stirs up all the creatures. And when he goes in, they're young boys. He doesn't notice them all roosting in like bats in the corner.
Right.
And as soon as the light hits them, they all come awake and they tear them apart. I mean, they chew them right down to the bone. So this is when we learn that an eclipse is imminent because they take that old style thing that was like used back in the day when they move it around to determine like planetary movement. And they're coming up on, or at some point, there's going to be a time when all three suns align and they're blocked by the giant planet, which looks like Saturn, but it's not Saturn. It's Saturn-y kind of thing, is going to block it out and cause a solar eclipse. And the problem is they don't know when it's going to happen. So he moves it on and says 22, and it's at 22 years. They're like, okay, what does that matter? Then they look at the core samples. They're almost 22 years old. And that's when you're like, oh, that's why it's a problem. See, if you have a monster who can't handle sunlight, vampires come to mind, and you're in the sunlight, great. There's no problem, right? But as soon as you don't have sunlight anymore, now that's a problem because now these creatures can thrive.
Yeah, the coring room, actually, the way it's revealed, actually turned, it's actually the boneyard. It seemed like all of the geologists gathered into the boneyard.
Yeah, because it becomes their grave, where they're dying. Because it's the only room, Rick says, it's the only room with a locked door.
With a locked door, right.
Right. Every other room is unlocked except the geology room, which is locked from the inside.
Yeah.
Because they have to blast their way in.
Yeah. The only thing was that the coring machine has obviously opened up a trench to the creatures.
Right. Yes. But they didn't think of it that way. All they know is they thought them coming out of the thing. And when Riddick says to him, he goes, they locked themselves in. Little they know, they left the back door open. And that's where the hole, and they're all coming out of there.
It's very effective scene.
Yeah. I mean, we never see what happens to the geologist, but it's all just implied. And then you see bones and stuff like that. It's kind of like, what happened to all the people who went into the cave in the descent before the girls got there? Well, you know what happened to them because they're all dead.
Yes.
You know, everyone's dead.
Now, with the core samples that are dated, they're dated 22 years ago. It's obvious that these creatures feed on something. So what food has kept them, basically kept them alive?
Well, we'll talk about that because that's coming up.
Okay.
Yeah, we know what else they'll do when food is scarce.
Okay.
So, we also learned now that Johns is a bounty hunter and a morphine addict. That was Howard's idea to have him shoot the morphine into the side of his eye. One of the hardest scenes in the entire movie for me to watch because I hate needles. And he's shooting the morphine into his eye socket.
Yes.
Which is gross. But he's a morphine addict. And that's when we get the, Fry starts realizing that she needs to redeem herself because she keeps telling them, I'm not your captain, because they keep looking to her for leadership, and she doesn't want to be captain because she knows that she would have killed every last one of them to save her butt. So it's her road to redemption about what she has to now do to, you know, get herself to where she's made amends. Johns knows that she would have killed all of them, and that's the problem because Johns is not a good man. Yeah, and Riddick says that. Riddick says, "You think Johns is a good man?" And he tells him, "Why did the co-pilot Owens? Why did Owens die in so much pain? There's enough drugs on this ship to whatever." And that's when he's a morphine addict.
I mean, I found this part of the movie to be really, really good. The interaction between Johns and Fry, obviously the two main crew members that are left, parallels the dangers of the creatures. I mean, it's a secondary story, but it's very important. And you question whether the individual storylines overshadow the collective danger of the survivors. But it was really done well.
Well, I think that's also, too, because, again, you're trying to tie. This was not ever designed just to be a creature movie. This was designed to be a sci-fi movie, and there needs to be science fiction stuffy happening and plot expedition and whatever there. And the creatures are, not to say secondary, but they are secondary at this point because the sun's still up.
Right.
And what happens is they start getting all the power cores, and Johns even says, "Don't bring the power cores to the ship early. Bring them at the last minute, because that's how Riddick escaped the last time. He murdered the entire crew and can fly a ship because he can fly." Now, we don't know yet all about his past and stuff, and that's all explained in the later movies. But we just know he's a killer. He's got to be really bad because he was put in a place where there's no sunlight, which is why he says, "I traded 20 cools to have my eyes done like that." And they surgically made his eyes, we can see in the dark. So his entire life was going to be in the dark, so he needed this to see. So that's someone who's clearly not a good person, at least in the scheme of what we normally think of as a good person here. So, so they start salvaging what they need, the power cells from the crash site, and they start bringing them back to the dropship, and they're using the solar-powered, like, sand truck, whatever you want to call it, right? The thing, but it's all solar-powered. And you can see as the sun's moving, that's when Jack takes the sweat off of, at this time, you think it's a he, brown. He starts wiping it, trying to keep as much sunlight coming in as possible, and it just dies. You know, after they've gone through, that's when, right there is one of the things I think that was put in, because Riddick originally wasn't the star of this movie. This movie was a very different film. We start seeing the evolution of Riddick and why this movie was changed so drastically on set to change where it was going to the very end. Riddick himself doesn't care about anyone but Riddick. He's a criminal, and he only cares about escaping and whatever. But Jack, who we assume is a little, Jack's a girl, but we don't know it's a girl yet. She sees him and she starts dressing exactly like him, and she starts wearing those broken goggles. She wants to be Riddick. She thinks that's what it's to be. And that's the scene where they're sitting on there and they're coming along, and she puts the goggles on and he just points real quick, and she ducks before she gets her head decapitated by the bones of the giant creature, whatever it is. Whatever creatures are, we don't know what those creatures are.
Oh, yeah. The first time you see something, the group is looking out towards the horizon, and they see what look like trees. And when the group walks over there, it turns out
they're like whale bones.
Basically. Yeah, some huge animal.
Yeah, it's clearly this planet has gone through some kind of change through time, and whatever was there has been eaten and whatever. But the thing is, that's the first time that you see Riddick do anything for someone else. I mean, he comes in when it's time to try to save the kid because they're all rushing in the room. But he's not jumping in there to fight these things. He's, again, being himself. I mean, he makes a makeshift shiv or as he calls it, a personal grooming device,
right,
when he's shaving his head with axle grease. Like, he's a criminal. He's played it like a criminal. But that's one of the first times you start seeing maybe there's something there. Maybe that he's still not completely dead to everybody. And that actually comes back again later. It's very important. So now the eclipse is starting, right? And it's imminent, which means the creatures will be able to start attacking and hunting above ground. So, so now they're trying to... So what happens is they get there, it stops. They go, we got to get these down here. And what starts pouring out of those hills but all the flying creatures? Now, Totopolis had always said that he visioned them at three different stages. And we see all three stages in this movie. We see the babies, which are the luminescent little ones, which we later learn. We see the flyers, when the flyers, the small flyers. And then, so that's when Shazaz is killed, when they're flying off, and now they're all coming. And Rick's like, get down. He pulls Jack down. They all get down, and she gets cut in half. But they're small still. And you're like, okay, they're still, they can be small. I mean, small things can kill you. But that's when they first hear, and then they start hearing the rumbling. And they go, what's that? And he goes, I told you, you don't have to worry about me on this planet. And that's when the big ones start coming out, and they blow out of those things.
Yeah.
So that's when we start learning during this, now the escape part, what they're eating. They clearly they're reproducing and whatever. But when they get hungry, they start eating each other.
Yeah, they're cannibal.
They're cannibalizing.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening underground. Because it's not like there's 10 of them or 50 of them. There's millions of them, and they're eating them. They're eating themselves. So the old and weak are probably what's killed off first. And our second phone call of the day, and we're back again. So they blow out. So that's when the hills are coming in, the giant creatures are coming out. We learned that they're cannibals and they're eating each other. Clearly, they're going to eat whatever they have to eat. During this time, the group starts gathering all the light they possibly can, and including those light bands, like those strings that go around them. And they start bringing the power cells to the ship. Now, obviously, they're going to drag the power cells. And at this point, Riddick says to them, keep the light on my back, because he can see, but he can't get too far away because they don't want to let him get away. And that's when Paris, his character is such, I mean, if he had been shivved by Riddick, it kind of hurts his redemption. But man, it would have been awesome because I hate that guy.
Yeah, the guy with the parasol.
He's such a jerk.
Right,
and he endangers them over and over again because he's greedy. And so what happens is when they have all of the stuff in there, and he had to go back for his liquor because God really doesn't have his liquor because that's what it is, it's liquor, right? And what happens is they're now trying to escape these creatures that are killing people. He has to grab a bottle. He grabs the bottle out of there, knocks the other bottle out. What's Jack say? Wait, let me get this. And no concern of let it go, Jack. Let's keep going.
Well, the other thing is the one thing the liquor does do is that it gives
them some fuel. But not at that point.
Not at that point.
Yeah. At that point, they still have power packs and they still have everything. Right. Get to the ship. They could have escaped. All of them could have lived. But no, he wants to keep drinking. And that's more important to him. So Jack goes to get that. And what happens is Jack pulls off and they say, stop. And Riddick's like, what do you mean stop? And they go and get, and that's when Fry now goes to get Jack. And Paris gets... He's like, I can't take it. And he runs away because he's a coward. On top of being a pain in the you-know-what,
right,
he's a coward. And what happens?
That is the most effective scene.
Well, when he...
His fear makes him crawl away from the group. And he causes the light ropes to disengage from the power source.
Right.
So now everybody's in the dark. So what does he do? And this to me is the most effective scene. He lights up his cigarette lighter after
he gets stabbed. He gets clipped either by a wing or by a tooth.
Right, and then when he... lights this up, it illuminates a dozen.
No, he takes liquor in his mouth, and he spits it out, and lights that. And that's the scene from the trailer. Because he says, I was supposed to die in Paris. And it's like, man, like, your skull would have been everywhere. There's, like, you know what I'm saying? But his death, like, no one, I guarantee, and I didn't see this in the theaters, but I'm guaranteeing no one's like, aww.
No.
No one felt bad.
No, there would have been a
bunch. You know what it's like? Again, remember in Aliens? Remember when, what's his face, when Burke gets it?
Yeah.
No one feels bad for Burke. Not even Burke's family. Burke's mom would be like, well, he deserved it. He's being a jerk, that kind of thing. So what happens is he gets killed there, and they start tearing him up, right? And they start eating him. And what happens is now they can't realize, they're like, huh, they'll eat that because they're all now swarming, and they can keep moving away. And so what happens is Riddick then says, well, we can't keep going with the girl bleeding. And Johns goes to Fry. She's not bleeding. He goes, not her. And it's obviously that Jack is a girl, yeah, and she's menstruating, and that's what they're smelling, and it's drawing them in. And Johns then goes ahead with Riddick. And this is when you see Fry having a moment of clarity, goes, wait, stay back. And she holds them back because Amon's like, well, we can trust them because he's a trusting man of God as he's watching all of his followers be slaughtered as he goes. And John says, why don't we kill the girl and drag her about 20 feet behind us, not to feed them, but to just give them bait so they keep them busy. And Riddick goes, well, I got a better idea who to kill. And he's like, what, me? And then they have their fight.
Right.
And what happens is John's needs to keep the light on because he can't see. And Riddick doesn't need the light. And that's when John's is killed. Now you say, well, how can he be redeeming himself, Jay, if he's killing him? John's is not a good man. So since he's not a good man, his sins must be paid for. Here's his sins. He wants to kill the girl who has done nothing but try to help them. And Riddick becomes judge, jury, and executioner, and they use John's body as the decoy.
The decoy, right?
The problem is now that John's is dead, right? They don't have the light strands anymore. They're really struggling. That's what you said. The liquor comes in, and they start making Molotov torches.
Torches,
right? So they continue on. The problem is Riddick now has to drag all of the power cells. And this is, I think, this is where Riddick became bigger than just Pitch Black. It became Riddick, became the name of the other movies, because he now takes on the next level. He now becomes a fully, we don't know anything about his past, we don't know about, but he becomes a full character, because now we need to get to this ship. It is still motivated by him surviving, but he's like, I will drag all of them. It's the I always think of it like, you go to the store and you have 20 bags now, I'm not making two trips.
Right.
Just put them on my arms. Put them on me. And Haley was like, Daddy, that's too much. Yeah, but I'm a dad. That's what too much is.
Yeah.
And he becomes that here as he's dragging it on. Because remember, Iman and him have the discussion early on about, you know, you don't believe in God. He goes, How can I live in the dark my entire life and not believe in him?
Well, that's what I want. I wanted to bring the point up about the Iman. Because it seems like even though he's a man of God, he has very little sympathy for the ones who die. And Only until the youngest son is killed does he get on his hands and knees and say, but it was God's will. But it doesn't say that. The thing is that God works in mysterious ways. He lets it rain to drown the bottles in flame.
Right, but that's what he says.
Then Riddick turns to him and says, "Where's your God now?"
Yeah,
because now there is no light.
The thing is, it starts raining, and at first, when you see that, you know, it very well could have been blood from all of them because they're cannibalizing themselves above them.
Right.
And to me, again, the rain makes sense because it totally is the Iman thinking that God will provide for him, Allah will provide for him as he's on the way to Mecca. And Riddick says, it's in The Road Warrior. Mel Gibson says, you want to get out of here? You talk to me, right? Yeah. It's you want to get off this planet? You talk to Riddick. Me. And that's what it is. And Riddick becomes that. And I think that's one of the reasons why. And again, people don't have to agree with me, and that's fine. Riddick to me is like Max. Fury Road became such a big hit, and people started rediscovering The Road Warrior and Mad Max and unfortunately Beyond Thunderdome. But I'm saying is like that idea of the person who's so driven by what they need to do, you know, but this movie was never supposed to be about Riddick. It was supposed to be about a different character. And Riddick became so influential. They said, well, maybe we change this. Maybe we can do this. And this would be good. And David Toohey, since he was part of the writing team originally, and he was like, yeah, let's do this, you know? So that's when the dad said it starts raining and all their torches go out. So they go to the cave. And inside the cave, he tells them, wait here. I'll go to the dropship. And he takes the power cells to the dropship. Well, Fry knows immediately he ain't coming back. She flat out says he ain't coming back.
Right.
And so what happens, they start taking the bottles. They pour all the liquor they can into one bottle, and they burn that torch as much as they can see in the cave. And they find these little illuminescent bugs. And those bugs are the baby larvae of the creatures under the ground. That's how they grow. And that's what Tatopoulos had said. He wanted to make very clearly there are three stages of development. There's your newborn or infant. There's your mid-level or adolescent. And they're a fully grown adult. And the fully grown adults are the ones that are super dangerous. The adolescents can kill you, but they have to fly around to get you. And the little ones are nothing. They fill up the bottle with it. And even that's not that luminescent. It's not like they have torches. They're just like little, it's like the illuminating power of a candle.
Right.
You know, but they have some light. So what happens? Riddick brings it back to the ship. He gets everything ready, and Fry gets there. And she clearly is exhausted, and she clearly is like, we have to go back. And he's like, no, we don't. You would have killed all of us. Come on, it's easy. And he goes, I'll make it easy. Puts his hand out for her. Again, it's her story of redemption from going from someone who is selfish and only worried about herself and would murder everyone to save herself. Now she's at the point where, no, we have to go back for them. We have to go back for the two people who are there, right? And Riddick is, you know, at this point, we've seen, right before that, when the cave, is when Jack gets attacked and Riddick saves Jack. And so you kind of start seeing like, okay, and then he does this and you're like, wow, but he really needs to not be like that. And she convinces him to go back. And she gets to the cave and they're like, oh, and they're thinking like he left. And then Riddick's there, you know, like, hey, what's up? You know, kind of thing. They get him to the ship. And that's when, you know, obviously they're coming out. That's when she dies. Fry has to die here. Originally, that's Riddick who dies there. Riddick was supposed to die there. Fry was supposed to be the one getting off the planet.
Yeah.
Right. But again, on set, they felt that Riddick was such a more interesting character and there was so much room to grow with this. They want to keep him alive. Because originally Riddick was supposed to die instead of Fry, but it was changed on set when they felt Riddick was could be used in the sequels. And obviously that's when they get in the plane. Now she's taken away and Riddick is injured during this process. And that's when he uses the fact that he learned that they're blind because he's observant of everything. And little things like that in this movie that are exploited in the other movies. He's so smart about the creatures around him. In Riddick, the third one, I mean, he learned, like, the thing in the water with the acid. He's learning all these things. They're like, well, okay, that almost killed me. I can't have that happen again. Like, he's from a race of people. We don't know this yet, but we learn. He's from a race of people who are true warriors. They are the ones that everyone fears. They fear the Furions. That's them. And the when we get to in Chronicles of Riddick, when you see the people who are taking over the planets and all that stuff, they fear the Furion. Like, that's the only people they fear, but they've already killed them. And they think they're all wiped out. And that's when he's the one left. They're like, he's the one who can save us. But what are you saving you from if everything is the same and you're all coming back from death?
One of the things that I wanted to mention during the, as they're trying to make it back to the ship,
yeah.
The night scenes, the night kill scenes that are portrayed in the movie reminded me a little of the Predator look with the infrared.
Because it's not infrared. They see in different things. But he sees in the green because his eyes are glinted. That's like a scope on a his eyes are basically scopes on sniper rifles.
Right.
And they see, but they also see motion.
Yeah, it's like night vision.
Because they're blind in the middle.
Yeah.
And because their eyes are set. It's kind of like a hammerhead shark. Hammerhead sharks don't see well right ahead. They only see well on the side, which is why they hunt differently than great whites or makos or whatever. That's what they knew they were going for. And it is reminiscent of the Predator, but remember, the Predator sees things in heat.
Right, in heat. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's basically the same look. It's not, nothing is defined like it would be in.
No, it's just like in hardware.
I found that to be another element that made the movie interesting.
Oh yeah, because it wasn't the same old thing. Yeah. But it's just like in hardware where it's seeing in heat and she and in the cold and she gets in the refrigerator and turns the cold all the way up to it and it can't. It sees her breath and it can't grab her breath. It's the little things like that that I think, again, they're all every idea, every movie has been made a million times. Every story has been made. That's people like, there's no original stories. But it's, can you make your story might have elements that remind you of something, but it's not completely aping it. Right, it's not like I'm going to make the exact same thing again. So this movie, I mean, I love this movie. We discovered this movie on DVD when it came out because it looked good, but we never went to the theater. 2000, I was like a senior in college. I saw a bunch of movies senior year in college, but I didn't see this. And it just was one of the things, we just didn't go see it. But we eventually picked it up on DVD and stuff, and then eventually on Blu-ray. Now, if you want this movie on Blu-ray, it's $7.99. The Blu-ray of this movie is $7.99 right through the Amazon link. So go to twotruefreaks.com, click the Amazon link, order your copy on Blu-ray, help us keep the lights on here. The Riddick Collection, which is Pitch Black, Chronicles of Riddick, which is the sequel, and then Dark Fury, which is the cartoon It's the animated movie. It's a shorter movie, but it goes middle. It actually picks up where this movie ends, where they go off into space. we don't know what happens. And then all of a sudden, Chronicle Riddick, when you watch Chronicles of Riddick, it's like, well, what happened? Dark Fury tells you what happens. They run into mercs in outer space. It's really well done, but there's no way in the world they could have gotten the money to shoot that quickly, so they had to film it that way. So that's $14.75. If you bought Riddick on Blu-ray, then you would want to get the Riddick collection, which is Pitch Black, Chronicles of Riddick, and Dark Fury. If you don't have any of them, you want to buy what's called the Complete Collection. And you're thinking like, well, it's the collection, the Complete Collection, all four of the movies, all on Blu-ray, $28.32, prime shipping. Like, that's great. For four movies, and you think like, well, but the animated movie, for three movies, $28 is a good price. And the thing about this is most movies, the first movie's got the big budget, and then the second movie might have a big budget, and it starts going down. I'm thinking like Nightmare on Elm Street and stuff like that. Those movies all made money. Friday the 13th really come to mind, right? The problem is this movie was not supposed to be anything, and then it did really good business. So then they said, hey, let's make Chronicles of Riddick. And Chronicles of Riddick was a big deal. Chronicles of Riddick was a major big deal for them to do, and they made good money. Made really good money. In fact, they made so much money, they made Riddick. After they were like, there's no way we're going to be able to get, you know, Vin Diesel come back. And Vin Diesel loves these movies. He comes back. Vin Diesel is I think he plays D&D, but he's definitely a nerd and geeky kind of guy, which is hard to believe because he looks like he's totally jacked out of his skull kind of thing. And he wouldn't be that, but he is. He loves nerdy, geeky stuff. So he loves this stuff. But the problem is, by the time they're making Riddick, you're already on like the fourth sequel of Fast and the Furious. He's already made The Pacifier. He had worked for Disney. And the problem was, Disney thought they had this bankable, and he's a bankable star because he's well-spoken and he's good-looking and he's kind of got a mixed race thing going on there. So he's not, he's marketable because he's good on talk shows, which is a big thing. And then when he didn't stay on with Disney, that's when The Rock got his break, because Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, was a wrestler and whatever. And The Rock is now the highest paid actor as of this recording in Hollywood. He makes money. Nobody makes the money he makes, because The Rock is really, really good at talking to people and doing whatever. And he's, his Samoan and African-American heritage and all this stuff like that. So that's why this is a weird film in that way, is that this was not supposed to be anything. Originally, Riddick wasn't even a character in the movie. It was about a biker, or not a biker. She was a gang member. It was a woman, which is part of what Fry's character is, who was all tatted up and had chains. It's just a different movie. And it kept evolving and evolving and evolving. And we finally got Pitch Black, which gives us Riddick, who is, to me, one of the best characters we've gotten in the last 20 years from a character standpoint. I think of him in the same vein as I think of Max, or Furiosa, even, because Furiosa is even newer. But I mean, now it's Mad Max Fury Roads got that in it. But I think of that kind of character, not necessarily as iconic as like Indiana Jones.
No.
Right. You know what I'm saying? But Indiana Jones, you know who that is. Right. When you say Riddick, not everyone necessarily knows that, but in the sci-fi community and in this community, Riddick is, it's just as iconic as being Dom from Fast and the Furious, which is also Vin Diesel. But it's the same thing that happens.
Yeah, I mean, Riddick is an edgy character.
Yes.
And as long as the films are done well, and he and they don't change the actor who's portraying him.
Mm-hmm.
And he maintains that persona throughout the films, you're going to have a successful series of films.
Yeah.
I mean, now whether they can get him back unless they do a fourth
there's
one.
There's no fourth one.
I didn't think so.
There's not going to be. Yeah. The thing is this, is that Riddick made a lot. Riddick, Chronicles of Riddick made way more money than they were like, let's make some money. It made really good money. Riddick made good money, but it didn't make insane money. The problem is we now live in a world of Marvel/DC, it's Marvel, yeah. Disney, and even these, and I know some people like hate every DC movie ever, but they make a lot of money too. But Marvel movies come out, like Civil War opens and it's like breaks every record ever. Oh wait, Doctor Strange opened, it broke those records again. Like, you have to make movies like that. Fast and the Furious make those kind of things.
Yeah.
I mean, Fast and the Furious movie should have ended two movies ago, but they kept making them, and the next one makes even more money, and the next one makes even more money. I mean,
By the way, we were mentioning Fast and the Furious. I happened to watch a movie the other night called Collide.
It's 2017.
2017. Yeah. If you're into fast cars, try to catch that. I mean, if you can get it on HBO.
Well, no, it just came out. It released It was released, I want to say, in late June, early July on DVD. It's probably going to be readily available. I don't think it's on Netflix right now, but it's one of the movies that will go to Netflix.
Yeah.
They'll be, because it'll go around, because it's not a, it's not a major studio release.
It is. I mean, it's like Fast and the Furious with the cars. I mean, it's not the same story by any stretch of the imagination, but it was. I was really surprised at how well it was done.
Yeah. So we have a few emails to read here, and I know this is kind of weird because this is like a specialty show because we're doing this for the solar eclipse, which hasn't occurred in like 40 years. And so but I figured we want to get these emails done because we got a lot of good feedback from people. And if you want to drop us feedback, it's botsbugsbabe@gmail.com. It's in the outro of the show as well. The first one comes from Luke. So from my brother. It says, Jay, just listen to the episode on The Fly, which, as you say, is one of the most well-known and well-received science fiction movies of all time, which it is. The Fly is very iconic. Much like other films of the 50s, The Fly has been retroactively seen as a commentary on the loss of identity and individuality in the post-war period in the U.S. While not on the larger scale like we see in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and to a lesser effect in I Married a Monster from Outer Space, which we mentioned as well, the loss of Andre's humanity is the central theme here. The Fly always reminds me of Kafka's The Metamorphosis, insofar as the loss of humanity is associated with the transformation of flesh into insectoid features, which is true. And The Fly, because it, I mean, Vincent Price's name helps it, because, again, he's a big major name, and Vincent Price has becomes a legend later on. The Fly has always been looked upon as, you know, at the time it was a movie, it was whatever, and people then later put more onto it. Invasion of the Body Snatchers was always about the, you know, the idea of the Russians taking over and whatever. I mean, that movie is knee deep in you know, the kind of stuff that Luke's talking about there. I think this is one of the key reasons for the staying power of The Fly and its various sequels and remakes. Bugs, along with crustaceans and cephalopods, are the closest things we have to alien life on our planet. They are recognizably alive, since they are part of the animal kingdom, as opposed to practically invisible single-celled organisms or plants or fungi. But they are unlike others mammalianized cohorts that is easy to get grossed out by them. The lack of comprehension and intelligence adds to this. The instinct-driven hive mind of a bug is a common trope in science fiction for this very reason. So as Andre is merged with the Fly, the combined or conjoined with mammals, this is small type.
Yes,
this is very small type. So as Andre is merged with the Fly, the convergence of the mammalian and the insectoid touches on a very base form of repulsion deep within our inherited DNA. Bugs and the other and should not be combined or conjoined with mammals. We can accept, just as any mammal, being part of a human culture or community as either pet or beast of burden, even oddball companions like skunks or opossums. But bugs are too inherently wrong in this differences. It's metatextual food for thought, and ultimately does the sort of wind back around to the basic bugs are gross sort of thinking, but interesting nonetheless. Cronenberg would take this several steps further and turn deep-rooted repulsion into outright body horror as Seth Brundle loses humanity right before our eyes, inch by disgusting inch. But the original still has the staying power just because the imagery of the Fly is so strong, such that the journey that Andre goes on is one that we can readily understand and sympathize over. As an aside, the screenplay was by that James Carvel, best known for writing the book Shogun, Taipan, and other novels in the Asian cycle. Luke loved those books. Remember Luke reading those things?
Yeah.
And to keep them going. The Misfits do have a song called Return of the Fly from their album Static Age. I will not be singing it. This is one of the, not as singable as The Crawling Eye, but the guitar work is pretty cool, featuring some chords from the additional chords from the traditional Funeral March. Thanks for another fun episode, and looking forward to Hardware and whatever comes down the pike. Luke. P.S. This is a bizarre tangent because we're so on tangent now. You mentioned Michael Rainey as a potential casting for Andre, which, of course, was played by Al/David Hedison. Best known for playing Captain Crane opposite Richard Basart's Admiral Nelson on Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, Rennie, of course, was in the 1960s Lost World, as mentioned. But so was David Hedison. But there's even more odd connections. The Lost World was directed and produced by Irwin Allen. And 4 years later, in the first season of Voyage, also produced by Allen, there is an episode called Turn Back the Clock, which features the crew of the Seaview discovering a hidden land filled with dinosaurs. Naturally! Allen, always looking to save a buck, used stock footage of dinosaurs from The Lost World, menacing Hedison and Jill St. John. The actual episode, however, features Yvonne Craig, best known as TV's Batgirl a few years later, and who probably cost less than St. John, so Craig is dressed similarly, and Allen hopes we don't notice. And joining Craig as the guest star in this episode is none other than Nick Adams, who also shot his episode of The Outer Limits, Fun and Games, the same year, before moving to Japan, where he began his work with for Toho with Frankenstein vs. Baragon, a.k.a. Frankenstein Conquers the World, on the set which he met Toho star Kumi Mizuno, who would become his co-star again in Monster Zero and was purportedly his lover, which led to his divorce, and some believe may have contributed to his death, which is still shrouded in mystery. The special effects, such as they are in The Lost World, were done by Willis O'Brien, with Allen specifically forbidding him from using any stop motion because of the cost, but retaining him because of the name value alone. Just goes to show how interconnected all these B-movies can be sometimes, where it can be easy to play, hey, wasn't he in Game? Thank you, Luke, for that. Again, Luke's right. A lot of the stuff he's mentioning there, Dad and I mentioned some of it there, and it's a lot of the stuff we discuss. The problem becomes this. We have to make sure that when we're having discussions that a microphone is turned on, because sometimes we have discussions like, wait, we said that. Like, no, we didn't. We said it beforehand, or we said it afterwards and stuff. And a lot of what Luke's talking about there is stuff we had talked about during the show. And then the other connections, of course, obviously Luke knowing his Kyaiju way, Dai Kyaiju way better than I do, or anybody else I know for that matter, except maybe August Ragoon. August, he's pretty good. I mean, he's the definitive answer on anything. But like, Luke's up there too. If you're interested in hearing Luke's podcast, you want to check out Earth Destruction Directive on the Two True Freaks network, where he covers everything Kaiju, Dai Kaiju, you know, Ultraman, you name it, all that stuff's on there. And he's also talking about, obviously, you know, any new stuff that comes out with King Kong or Godzilla or any of the new movies coming out. In fact, this is dropping in August. Hopefully you all went out and picked out your copies of Konga Skull Island, which came out in July, like July 18th. If you didn't, Two True Freaks, go to the link, order it there. That's what we did. So second email is entitled Great Show. So I'm going to leave it at that. And no, it says, hey guys, love the show. I have been a fan of old B movies for 50 years now. So it's nice to hear another old duffer that appreciates them. Not just you younger fellas. Love the banter between you and your dad. Just one small moan. It's quarter mass. It sounds like crater mass, not quarter mass. Well, here in America, it's quarter mass. That's how it said. I understand it's not said that way, obviously overseas, but yeah, definitely. Anytime you heard it, it was always said. It's there's no R. It's not quarter mass. It's not said like the word like a quarter. There's no R in the Q U A R. Yeah. Not there. It's quarter mass. So anyway, not a huge thing, but. I know, but English. I had to point it out. Looking forward to Hardware. Check out the 2000 AD story Shock that the film is based on. Keep up the good work, guys, and all the best, Nick, 50-year-old English longtime listener. And we talked about obviously Hardware and the issue of Shock with the robot trying to attack her, which was in, I want to say, 1981's Judge Dredd annual. I don't have the number. I know someone will pick it up. Someone will know this. I have it at home written down. I don't have it here, but it's definitely in one of those Judge Dredd annuals. And it's a great little story. So it's not the whole movie, but you can see clearly what they got. I mean, in fact, the point where the robot's diving at her across the apartment, and they're like someone did. Like, it's funny because Richard Stanley, of course, like, oh, it is? It's like, Richard, come on. Come on, Richard. You know you like this round. This one's titled Live Free or Die Hardware. Okay. From our longtime listener and big supporter, Jack Bond. Okay. Jack writes in all the time. Hardware, wow. I hadn't seen it or much thought about it since being part of the opening weekend gross, so thanks for bringing it up. So we talked about the fact that it made a good opening weekend. I was too young to see it. It wasn't something we did, but Jack obviously was old enough to see it. And again, I know Jack has just get back to his email a second. I know he had asked for, hey, when the robot's coming. I said, well, be patient, because we had talked about Hardware. We had talked about Chopping Mall. We had talked about The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is a very different movie than the other two I just mentioned. But we thought Hardware would be great, a movie that you hadn't seen probably in 20 years. I mean, I had the Blu-ray, and that's the reason I even had seen it recently. A movie that is totally, I think, lost, and people just kind of forgot about. And it's so good to see. But, you know, we try to, again, one of the nice things we try to do here is, and as you hear our episodes and you're like, okay, like we heard, Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, we heard, Santa's Sleigh, like different things. We try to mix it up. I try not to go like 1958. I mean, this could be called the 1957/58 podcast at times, but that's because a lot of good movies were made those years. Anyway, so while researching and looking for a way to see Hardware, I was also trying to sort out memories of less stylish movies with less convincing pair of, what to call them, heroes, protagonists, targets, a less convincing lead actor and actress. Researching that, it turns out I must have seen Chopping Mall under its more appealing to me title, Killbots, which is what this other title is. Okay. Killbots. Chopping Mall to me is funnier because it's a bag with like body parts in it. It's coming blood. So you gave me a double blast from the forgotten past. Thanks, Jack. Jack, a longtime supporter of the show. He is always, great feedback from him. Always has good stuff for us, and you know. What we're talking about, folks, is here, and I know some of you are like, oh, you know, Luke writes in a lot, or Jack writes in, and yeah, because they're passionate about what we're doing. If you have, you know, if you want to tell us something, let us know. We want to hear from you guys. We want to be, we want to know what you're thinking. If you like something, great. But we also need to know that if you're thinking like, okay, I would like to hear, about this, or man, hey, you guys haven't talked, and like, what about, like, I don't know, Devil Girl from Mars, right? Is that the name of that? What's one? What's like? We came to Earth for breeding stock, which is in the opening of the show. And that actually brings me to the email I actually received not more than like 12 hours ago, right where we recorded this. And it says, my name is Todd Brown, and I would like to know. Oh, sorry. It says The Beginning of the End. That's the title. My name is Todd Brown, and I would like to know if you would please review the movie The Beginning of the End for me. Thank you very much. Your number one listener, Todd Brown. So I said, I got that. I actually read that right off my email from my phone. We didn't have time to even print it. So there are some of you thinking like, well, how they pick these movies? Well, I would like to say there's a very scientific process behind it, but it really is just us discussing a bunch of movies, seeing like, okay, have we done one like this? Have we done one from this year? Did we do this director? And you're saying, but you guys have talked a lot about Harryhausen. Well, it's hard not to talk about Harryhausen because, again, those are the movies that inspired, they were very important to my dad growing up. They were what helped shape myself and my brother when we were growing up, along with the other, obviously, influences, Godzilla and King Kong and stuff like that. And we're trying to give you guys different stuff. I mean, to talk about Pitch Black, it was on cable in the summer, but I don't think people have watched. I mean, I don't know anyone who sits down and pulls this movie out because it's just a movie that you're like, oh, that's a good movie. You kind of forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, The Beginning of the End with the grasshoppers and is to me like the monster from Green Hell. They're okay. They're really short. I mean,
the monster from Green Hell did not have Peter Graves.
I'm trying to think.
But Peter Graves is in The Beginning of the End from Biography. So
yes, but it did have an actor who was popular. Yeah. But again, there are hundreds and hundreds of movies to pick. I mean, if we're going to do an insect movie, we did them. We did the Black Scorpion.
We did two about insects, and we are going to have other insect movies coming. That's the problem. We didn't want to do insect movie.
I mean,
or robot movie. Kind of thing.
You're looking for an insect movie. You can't be any better than Starship Troopers.
I mean,
that is the insect movie.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, too, and again, all those, like, beginning of the end was on my list, along with, like, Creature from the Haunted Sea, right, and, yeah, like, Monster from Green Hell, and, like, even Day the World Ended, you know, like, with Tabunga, you know, kind of thing. Those are all movies on our list, and as we're going through trying to place them in the right order, you know, I know it might seem like I only tell you what's happening, like, in the next month, but we have, like, a year and a half, 2 years planned out on what we want to do, and then I start fitting special feature ones in, like this, okay? That's like we did the review of Kong of Skull Island. That was a special one, because Kong of Skull Island is not a B picture. It was an A picture. It made A money,
right,
and we reviewed it, and we're gonna try and sneak in a few extra ones here and there where they make sense. Next year, especially, and I don't want to give anything away, but there are some anniversaries next year of things that are occurring that are very important. And there will be some special episodes coming then, too. And we are looking into all of that. But definitely, Beginning of the End was one of the movies that's on my list of, you know, the bug movies. Because, again, I didn't want to double up on bugs. And why do we do them first? Because them is a very important movie. Very, very important movie in the grand scheme of things. And then Black Scorpion, because we love Black Scorpion. And not that this was anything else, but that's, again, there they were actually using real grasshoppers, you know, kind of thing. And just like they did in other movies, and they didn't have the money to do it, so they shot it around it. But it's no different than Tarantula, which we've also discussed, right, and things like that. And it's just, things are on our list and we're getting there. This is not a daily podcast, so it takes a little longer to get through things. But I don't want anyone to feel that we aren't hearing you. We do hear you. And again, like I said, I respond to every email personally as soon as they get them. It might take me a day or so, especially during the school year when I'm kind of busy, but I definitely get back to everybody and I love hearing from you. So I think we're good on Pitch Black.
Right? Yes.
And, you know, this being the second episode of August, you know, this is the August 21st for the solar eclipse. What's going to happen is you're looking forward to September's episode. Now, September episode, now that's when it starts getting a little cooler. Maybe not here. They sometimes refer to as an Indian summer here when it's like 90 degrees in September, which when I was coaching football was never fun. You're just like, wow, is it so hot? But we're going to go. You know, we have one of those ideas of a special episode. We are able to have Luke on with us, and we're going to talk about the Golden Voyage of Sinbad,
right,
which is, again, we talked about that when we talked about Seventh Voyage. I know the two Harryhausens kind of close together. That was Luke's choice. Luke picked him. He went, I want to talk about the Golden Voyage of Sinbad. And we only had limited time with Luke.
Yeah, because he was here physically with us.
Yeah, to do it. And we were like, let's do this. So we didn't have much time, and he got to pick the movie he wanted. And Dad and I already had just done Seventh Voyage. We're like, all right, it's great. This will work. And it's one of those movies that, again, and we'll talk about this more as we get there, when you hear it, a lot of people, I think, it's not shown a lot. It's not lost, but it's harder to find.
Right.
That's probably the better way to put it. Unlike Jason and the Argonauts or Seventh Voyage, which is readily available, and TCM shows them as well, too. Golden Voyage is one of those, if you want to watch it before we talk about it, which is always a good idea, check it out. That'll drop to you the 13th of September. Anything else, Dad? I think we're good, right?
I think we're good. This has been a fun day here.
Yeah. So keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters? Or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at 2TrueFreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!